Welcome back to the Dear Katie podcast. This is Katie Kessner, and today I'm so excited to tell all of our listeners that I am joined by a fabulous human named Brad Friedel, who I met on an airplane ride when I was about to give a speech, and he was about to do something totally different in his world. And we started talking about our own journeys through life, and I absolutely embraced the idea that he had something very important and relevant to discuss on the podcast. But I would love, Brad, you to tell our listeners a little bit more about who you are and what you've done so far in life.
Hey, Katie. Yeah, it was an interesting way to meet. Thank you for having me on your show. I'll give a little bio about myself. My upbringing was very normal, very American, should I say. I was born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio. My mom and dad were incredible parents, still are. My dad passed away in 2015, but they were together, mine and my sister's entire lives. Played every sport under the sun growing up. Was as it turned out, was a very good athlete. Graduated from Bay High School, but I got scholarship offers to play multiple sports, tennis, ice hockey, basketball, and soccer. I chose to take a scholarship to UCLA for soccer after winning the Herman Trophy, which is, I guess, equivalent to the Heisman Trophy, and winning a national championship at UCLA. I left school 1 year early and turned professional. I went overseas. At first, we didn't have a professional league in the United States to play soccer, so going overseas or into South America or Mexico was really the only option at the time. And just from that point on, just had some wonderful experiences. I got to play in 2 Olympic Games. I played in 3 World Cups representing the United States. I had a professional career that lasted over 23 years. Played and lived at the time, the biggest club in Denmark called Brøndby. So I lived in Copenhagen for a short spell. I played for an enormous club in Turkey called Galatasaray and lived in Istanbul for about 18 months. Played, not that this show is about work permit, but I had to come back, played a short spell at Columbus Crew so I could get my international caps up so I could sign for Liverpool. And from that point on, from 1996 on and through 2015, I played in what I consider to be the greatest league in the world, the English Premier League. And I got to play with just some incredible clubs. Liverpool, Blackburn, Aston Villa, and Tottenham. And I believe I was the second oldest player ever to play in the Premier League, retired at the age of 44 in 2015. And then after that, I signed and was a studio analyst and pundit and co-commentator for Fox Sports and Fox Soccer. I was the head coach of the under-19 United States youth national team, assistant coach to the United States under-20 national team. And then was the head coach of New England Revolution. I currently own and operate an agency. I now represent players and consult for groups within the United States, actually not just within the United States, but globally. And I still work in media. I work through the World Cup. I have wonderful relationships throughout with NBC, Sky Sports News, ITV, BN Sports, Channel 4, Channel 5 in the UK and the US, just various outlets that give me a call. So that's a brief rundown, Katie, of who I am.
Brad, you are a highly accomplished and generous human, and I think a flexible one. And when I met you, for our listeners, one of the things that I was just enamored with was Brad's willingness to talk about some of the overheard conversations and his observations around many of the issues that hit home for a lot of us around power and control and what it means to be valued and appreciated and treated equally in a lot of different ways. And Brad did not mention this, but I hope he's okay with me saying this. He's also the proud parent of some kids, including some girl. I think one or two girls. I can't remember how many you have, Brad. I think you have one on the way.
2 girls, yeah. And a stepdaughter and one on the way, yes.
Yeah. So I think it's incredibly helpful, I think, for our listeners to learn from you, Brad, both because you've already carved out an incredible career, clearly have credibility in and of itself in what you have to offer and your opinions, because I think I had a cause, unlike you. I didn't have a talent per se when I started out, but I had a cause and I had a clear-minded goal. And then it's all about having credibility and relevance from thereafter with whatever our hearts and minds want to do. And you clearly did that well once you, I did not know you had to choose amongst tennis and soccer and like four sports. That's a cool thing in and of itself. But how does soccer, I just wanted to roll back to one thing. Like, how did you choose soccer over all the other sports you were playing?
Well, yeah, I got offered scholarships in the other sports as well. My true love, actually, of a sport when I was younger was ice hockey. I was all about ice hockey. And then when I got to about 14, 15, I still really liked ice hockey. I really liked basketball. I really liked tennis. But in order to be a professional athlete, not just an athlete, in order to be a top professional in any profession, I firmly believe you have to love what you're doing, because it takes an extraordinarily amount of hard work and time and dedication, of course. But what some people would say is that you have to be able to focus and miss out on certain things. So, I mean, take it like simple in college, miss out on a party, for instance. Well, with regards to soccer, I never had an issue with missing out on a party to go to the gym because I needed to work out. It didn't seem like work to me. So that was the thing that I loved the most, and I was willing to dedicate myself to become the best that I could. The other sports I liked, and I had a talent, but I don't think I would have ever made the top of the tree because I didn't love those sports, and I definitely would have not done what I did to reach the levels that I did in soccer and those other sports.
Fantastic. Thank you for explaining that dedication. And I think the way I would turn the point that you just made is all of life is about dedication and vision and what we really want and firmly committing to it and finding it makes us, it ignites a fire in us. And I sense that from you immediately, both that you still live the fire that you've had, and you and I are about the same age and we've had the same kind of long-term fire because we love what we do. And so I started there, and that's probably why I connected with you, is there's few people I think many of us meet in life with such dedication and passion. But now maybe we could delve into, I loved hearing from you about those conversations, and you were not a fly on the wall, which is what I love. Like, you were not incognito, and sometimes you've had conversations of courage about women referees or overheard what women in Fox Sports. And I think it's so helpful for many of our listeners play sports. We just interviewed Margaret Hollister. She's a Olympic swimmer. So we have so many we've interviewed fencing champions and like all kinds of gymnasts, and we have a lot of sports enthusiastic folks on the podcast. And I think what is really interesting is we're now in a place in the world, especially it's ignited a huge firestorm in the US about gender identity and gender assignment and role expectations, who can play what sports. Like, there's a whole big conversation going on around gender and sexuality and identity, even further than we ever could have imagined, beyond Me Too and beyond people getting, you know, players being called out for sexual assaults. Like, I would love to hear from you, maybe going backwards in time, what two phases of your life. One is as a player and a participant at the level you have been, I'll say soccer, but football would have been the better term for the global audience that we do have. So I wanted to parse out and just ask you to reflect first, when you did not have the Fox News sports identity prior to that role and prior to your role as running your own company and agency. I like thinking about it when you still were a part of the system in a different way as a player. I like thinking about it in different ways because I think our audience can relate to that. Some are players, some are coaches, some are in charge of systems. But when you're a player around all men's organizations, when can you remember the first time it was even talked about that a woman might referee a game? I'm curious, did that ever happen?
Yeah.
Yeah. How long ago was that?
In the Premier League, I think I was still a player and there was a woman's referee. I mean, I think I'd go back even further. So I had a sister and we were very close growing up. I had a group of friends of which we had girls in the group in this small community called Bay Village, Ohio. And so we all hung out with one another. And I'm going to go back to like a tennis story because I used to play tennis with one of my very good friends who actually was one of triplets. And there was two boys and a girl, and she was the best tennis player of the triplets. And when I was a senior or junior in high school, we were playing against a team that a girl's player was permitted to play on the men's team because she had some medical issues during the women's season. They were on different seasons at the time, and they grandfathered her in to play against the men's. And I would normally have played doubles with a partner of mine. And instead, the coach had me play singles against the female player because he knew that I had grown up with playing against. I mean, we're going back to the 80s, and he openly told me this: I want you to play against her because, one, I know that you'll respect her wholly. Two, you'll know how to compete against her. Three, you'll have no problem if you're better or she's better. Who wins or loses, it's the best person. It doesn't matter what gender you or she is. And I played against her. So, I mean, it goes back then. And as far as a female referee, growing up in youth soccer, quite often would have female linesmen and referees every now and again. At the top level in England, and keep in mind, England was a little bit slower on the take, especially with male chauvinist behavior and thoughts and processes and accepting women, homosexuals, things of that nature. And it was probably a female linesman that came on board first. And the way that I viewed it was, can the lines person or the referee do their job? I didn't care if they were a man or a woman. It made no difference to me whatsoever. I just watched an MLS game yesterday, and Tori Penso is the name of the referee. Was Inter Miami at home to Chicago. I thought she did an outstanding job in the game, and I was texting with friends back and forth during the game that I really like how the flow of the game was going. And again, I would say that the same about a male referee, and I would also, if the refereeing wasn't good, I would say that too. And it is absolutely irrelevant whether it's a man or a woman. I just think, like with race as well, racism, it usually stems from your home and your upbringing, the way that I look at it. And if you were home in a way that makes you more ignorant than others, and I had used the word in my world as ignorant, then you have to get educated somewhere else. And fortunately, in this world, people don't want to get educated somewhere else, don't believe in getting educated somewhere else, and want to remain in their own thoughts and views as they go through this short life that we have, which is really unfortunate. But I was very good friends with the women's national team players. I still remain friends today with a few of them back as going, being at the same Olympics with them in 92 and 2000. I wish actually when they were going for the equal pay, that they had contacted the men players and our association earlier, because we would have, as the male players, we would have had no issue with them combining with them. The United States, as a matter of fact, they're world champions. They're they almost invented the game of soccer. So why wouldn't we want to partner with them, especially commercially?
Let's talk about two things you just brought up. One is, I want to think about why you were willing to say, I'm gender neutral on a position. It's just do the job and do it great. And in that same context, although that was your position, were there others around you, including fellow players who didn't agree? And how did you deal with that? And two, after you get through that, I like thinking about your comment about the women's soccer team. They are clearly leaders and they're globally trying to change the equity in sports, discussion. And I wonder why, this is part two on it, and we can come back to it. I'll ask it again, why they did not feel comfortable or did not maybe reach out to the men's team. So
let's go back to the first one. What was the first one again?
Yeah, the first one first. The first one is what I find so captivating and amazing is, since I was around lots of men your same as, like, we're the same age. So you and I lived through the same American experience in high school. I don't know if we're exactly, we're within a couple of years of each other. And so I think you're a unicorn for the most part, in terms of men your age, having grown up in Americana and being willing to think the way you do about the role women play in sports, especially. And I'll disclose this, Brad, my own husband, I've heard him say, women have no place. My own husband says women have no place as reporters because they just don't understand men's sports. And we had a fierce and feisty argument about that. But he, like you, he's the same age too. And he is a sports fiend and he's a soccer player, not to your level, but believe it or not, I married a soccer player and he is really keen on stay in your lane. And for him, he defines lane as a little bit about gender, understanding a men's sport versus a women's sport. So, like, let's just start with part one.
Okay. On the reporter side of things, I disagree with your husband. And this is the reason why there's a lot of great coaches in the world in all sports, male and female. And some of the greatest never played professionally and never played at a high level. They studied and they became good at managing and they became good at understanding tactics, but they could never play. So that tells me right now, it doesn't matter if you're male or female, you can learn. So the reporters, the female reporters and the female analysts that I worked with and still work with today are educated to talk about the men's game and talk about the women's game. I'll actually go a step further. I think there are fewer men out there that can commentate and be a studio analyst on the women's game than there are that women that can talk about the men's game. I, for one, I'm friends with many of the women's players, but the men's game and the women's game is different. The physicality is different. What a foul is different. It doesn't mean one's better than the other. It's different. And the aerial collisions are different. The types of goals that are scored are different, but not one is better or worse than the other. But you have to understand that. So if somebody asked me to go on as a studio analyst.
Hey, Brad, just 1 second, because not everyone is steeped in sports. Can I make an analogy to what you just said? And you correct me if I'm wrong. You just said the metrics for the two games are different. And that's, to me, what I might say to a listener is what makes a great pop song versus hip hop song are different. It doesn't mean that one's better or different. They're just different. And the metrics that go into what makes one great is different. Or similarly, what makes two other things different, but also in the same genre could be what makes one food. Like, you might love barbecue And somebody else might say that the only best food is this. But I'm just trying to say, like, what you're trying to say is there's different standards and they're both equally relevant.
Correct. And I think the word that needs to come out is respect. I don't really care for baseball. Okay. I tried to play it. I've tried to watch it and I don't really. Okay. But I got to tell you, I respect the heck out of the people that play it. As in the 92 Olympics, UCLA had an incredible women's softball team. And the pitcher, Fernandez, was unbelievable. And I put on, we were at school one day, and I put on a catcher's mitt, and I had her throw to me at the underarm fastball. That thing is moving. And I respect it. Now, I don't really like baseball, but I respect anybody that has a talent in their own profession. It doesn't mean that you have to like it. It doesn't mean that you have to pay a ticket to go watch it. But I think respect is the biggest word. It is the biggest word out there. So I was head coach in New England Revolution. Female was the linesman. And not to disparage the male linesman, but the female linesman was better. So I would have rather her been the linesperson for the game any day of the week. No problem. Now, I also didn't go up to her, running up to her and say, hey, you are fantastic because you are a woman. No, she was just good. I just shook all three, well, four officials of the game and walked off the field. But if somebody is good at what they do, then I have respect for that. If somebody is not very good but works hard at what they're trying to do, I also have respect for that because not everyone is going to be at the top of their profession.
Okay, I got that, and you're amazing. And what do you think is limiting anyone else who doesn't agree with you that is still saying a gender identity alone already is insufficient?
But Katie, I go back. I have to give my mom and dad credit. That's what I look at. How can any human being in this world look at somebody else by the color of their skin, the color of their hair, what their eyes look like, and automatically not like them? It's for me, the way I was raised, it's impossible. You like someone for how they treat you and how you treat them. So where is that taught? It's usually, and not every time, but it's usually taught in the household and in the environment that you're raised in. Now, I was brought up in an all-white suburb of Cleveland. And I came out of that with not one racist bone in my entire body.
That's incredible. I don't know why. Yeah, why?
Well, why? Because of how my parents raised me.
Did you go to school? So back to, I just want to talk about your surroundings and the other, besides your parents, who clearly gave you this amazing understanding of life and equity and inclusivity. I can't even imagine, Brad, that you and I grew up around thinking about, like, I'll just say this. I went to, like you, a very white high school in Pennsylvania, next door to Ohio. And there were so few minority kids. But when you went into the cafeteria for lunch, those tiny few people who were not white were sitting at the same table. And I felt like they must have felt like scattered snowflakes, just in disarray and very lonely. But luckily, in some of my classes, the brightest kid ever was Ghulam Ahmadi. And I partnered with him for every single darn project. And it was like a girl and the minority boy were the only two out of. And so I learned inclusivity that way, not from my parents. But you learned it from your parents.
Well, I learned it from my parents, but also learned it in sport. So I played a heck of a lot of basketball and also in soccer. I'd have to say in every locker room that I was in, probably from the early 2000s, mid 2000s on till I retired, I would have been categorized as a minority. But again, I never looked at someone and shook their hands and was like, okay, a great forward. So I use his name. He's a friend of mine. He won't mind. So Andy Cole, one of the best strikers ever to play the game. I wouldn't sniff for once of said, Andy Cole, he's a black or a brown striker. I mean, come on. It's ludicrous. And I have a really hard time understanding how people think like that. But my only conclusion that I can come up with is they were either raised like that or their parents didn't give them enough attention, or maybe they were from a broken family. And the group that they got involved with at a very early age all thought like that. Because I just find it unfathomable to meet somebody and if they're homosexual, you don't like them. I mean, come on. Like, really? Is that it? Like, are they nice or are they not nice? Like, it's a pretty simple equation for myself.
Right. And Brad, I think what you said is so beautiful and succinctly well put, because when we can roll back all of our judgment, and you are clearly teaching our listeners, you were able to experience that through the collective camaraderie of loving sports. When we have a similar passion or goal as humans, we can set aside almost everything down to the color of our skin, how much hair we have, how old we are, our religious beliefs, everything we can set aside because we have a clear, similar vision. Did I say that? Do you agree, disagree?
I agree wholly. And I'll pose another thing to you. This is just in sports. But some of the very best players that I've ever been on a field with, whether it's in an Olympics, a World Cup, or Premier League, were mixed, black, brown, whatever word you wanted. The words drive me crazy. But until just recently, none of those players could even get an interview to be a head coach. Why? Like, I don't know. Me personally, I don't know, because my brain isn't put together like that. But it has to be because of race, because it has nothing to do with their quality as a player, nothing to do with them getting their coaching badges, nothing to do with how smart or not smart they are, and has nothing to do with their knowledge of the game. I have a ton of friends that don't even go through their coaching badges because they just don't think they'll ever get the interview. And they're probably right. And it's remarkable. Go NFL, some of the greatest players of all time. Now, NFL has made huge strides, but NBA, they're starting to make huge strides. But I mean, until recently, it was, look at almost every coach was white. I mean, it's remarkable. And the greatest players are not always just white. The greatest minds in sport are not just white. There's some really good ones, but the really good mixed ones, brown ones, black ones, Asian ones, doesn't matter. And very good. This is my point earlier in the show, is if you're willing to put the work in to be good, doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter if you're male or female, if you're white or if you're black. Are you good or are you not good at your job? And we're putting the last thing on the sports side of things that I'll put in there. We're put in these, and I understand it. I understand this next comment of why we have to do it. But if we're in an executive position and you know who you want to hire, you have to go through this process of interviewing what people would categorize as a minority in this country. They might not even be a minority somewhere else in the world. So I don't, it's like falsifying the interview process. Because then you're interviewing people that might not even be qualified for the job. And we've gone so far away from what people actually know to what the perception is if we hire this person or don't hire someone else. And it's a real shame. It really is. Now, if I would like to think if more people were like had a mind like mine, it wouldn't matter because we would open up interview processes to everyone. But because of what I had just said, where it was predominantly all white and all male, people had to do something. And so I understand it, but it's a real shame that we've had to get to that process. It's just a shame people can't respect people for what they've done, who they are, how smart they are, regardless of what they look like.
Well, beautifully said, Brad. Let's change. turn the page to a new chapter in our talk. What about going to the next thing I asked about, which is when you then transitioned from, I want to go back. Was there ever a time in your...
You wanted to say something about the women's national team, I believe.
I did. Why did they not reach out to, you know, the men's team? Why do you think?
It's a really good question. And one, I mean, maybe they thought we wouldn't help. The monies, it's a really difficult one because the monies that come in from FIFA until just recently were so small on the women that it was a pretty easy argument for any federation across the world to say, well, we're going to give more money to the men because there's more money in the FIFA World Cups for the men. The United States is just different because the women's game is so popular.
I know.
Women's athletes are so popular. The women themselves, the U.S. players, are arguably the best always in the world. Whether if they don't win it, it's not because they weren't one of the top three teams, for instance. So I really don't know. That's a great question. I've never asked any of my friends on the women's side that, but I can't.
But perhaps maybe we can muse upon, and when you do that, what do you maybe think that we trust no one, or maybe they thought we want to do it on our own terms and we don't want to ever be beholden to the men's team for making it happen. I'm not sure.
Yeah, perhaps. I'd be guessing. I just don't have the knowledge on why. I would be guessing. I know that the committee, we had a 5 or 6 person committee. When I played, I was always on that committee. And I know the guys that were on that committee wouldn't have had an issue. And saying that, it just came out recently, there was a bit of a feud with two of the ex-players, and I know a disparaging email went out about a female referee, and I was really shocked that I saw that, because the person that did it was in an executive role at the time, and I guess nothing would surprise me, Katie, in this world or in this game, but I would have thought back, it was the big players were like Mia Hamm and Julie Foudy, and they were good. They were friends with a lot of us. We would have openly, I mean, the power, Mia Hamm was all over at the time, Wheaties boxes and everything. I mean, I think our head of our players association would have loved to have had that ammunition to go in on the commercial side of things. So who knows? I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a really important question, Brad, and we don't have to answer it right now. But what about we talk about next? I love thinking next about for your information, I just interviewed a singer, rap star, amazing artist who was talking to me about, and our listeners, about harassment and discrimination. And so when you are listening at Fox Sports, how do you navigate that with what you hear and what you feel comfortable even saying? I'm like, the coolness about you is you're there, you're hearing it. I know I trust you that you already have the right understanding, but I can only imagine there's still some trepidation that, like, I can't speak up and something might happen. Can you talk to me about that?
Well, the first time I haven't spoken to her that I would be speaking publicly, so I won't say her name. We were on the road with Fox, and something had gone on with her wardrobe, and she was really worried about how she was going to look the next day because the executives wanted the women to, especially the sideline reporters, to look and dress a certain way. And I looked at her. There was a whole bunch of us at dinner. The whole crew goes out the night before games. And I looked at her, I was like, are you being serious? And she goes, yeah. And I was like, so I just said to her, I was like, well, what do you have? She goes, I have this. I said, well, that's what you're wearing and be happy with it. I was like, what? Like, why would anyone? And she's like, no, you don't understand. And she was right. I didn't understand. And I didn't even know that went on. Fox is an interesting place because as you can probably hear, I'm the most non-political person in the world. And I didn't know anything about what went on in Fox News. I didn't know what went on with regards to, I had no idea like who mainly watch mainstream Fox News. I lived in Europe from 1996 to 2015. So, and Fox Soccer and Fox Sports, oh, we just spoke about soccer. So the longer I was there, the more of the politics I saw. It was not a, it was just for me and the way that I like to operate my life, it was not a wonderful environment to be in.
Can I ask this question, Rod? I know you're thinking about that, but I think to paint a picture that would be really helpful, most of us are visual learners, not auditory, and we're doing podcasts over auditory. But can you describe the setting, like almost like a movie, of where you walked into or overheard or experienced something that really just jarred, one of the most jarring experiences? And you don't have to name names, of course.
Well, the biggest thing I'll say, and I'm not going to get into too much controversy, Katie, I hope you understand that. What was jarring to me, and we can go sometime else on gun crime, because I've read the Constitution and what it was meant to be. What was jarring to me is this freedom of speech. Okay. And then when somebody says you're not allowed to say something negative about a certain side of politics in the US, my first thing that came to my mind is, well, why would you even say that? Because we never talk about politics on our show, sports, soccer. And second is, so my assumptions as I move back to the United States are basically true. We're not a free country. People control lots of stuff. And that was an eye opener. That was a real eye opener, because it made me start to look into more things. And then when you think you would have your like confidant inside the company and you ask, is that really like the way they think? Well, and it's like, well, they're very clever. They don't say yes or no. They say, well, and it's more along the lines of, well, that's where the paycheck comes from, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And again, like in the soccer world, Katie, it never, ever would have come up. But to know that was actually going on, I couldn't imagine having graduated from high school, gone through college, worked really hard to get myself into a newsroom, and then everything comes crashing down because someone's telling you what you can or can't say. Like, I couldn't imagine that if I was on that side.
I would just say this, Brad. One thing I really loved when we spoke initially is I feel like you worked your way through at least 25 years of your life as a solo operator, resting fully and squarely on the laurels of your dedication and skill. And then you went to Fox News, you retired, and then you had to answer and hear a different part of the discourse of life that did not resonate necessarily as your, you know, role as a player. And you got to be a fly on the wall on how you were being packaged all of your life in a way. Like, you play the game, you're on the field, you're cutting the grass, you're kicking the ball, you're doing all the hard work, and someone's packaging you all the time. In any space, is that wrong? Am I saying too much?
No, it was a small little snippet at Fox, because again, I was at soccer. It just made me start to think. It was very similar, but it's more the country that we live in now. It's like COVID. Okay, so if you go and say, hey, it's flu season, go get your flu shot, most Americans are like, okay. And when it was COVID, it became this big political thing. Like, well, it's false, it's fake, and people aren't dying. And because there's motivation in this country that is, it's not real. It's about power. It's about so many things other than human beings. I find a lot of things really interesting. One of the biggest things, so I live in England, one of our biggest allies, you know, the United States and England, and they're socialists. But the amount of people in the United States that think socialist is communist, and this is not. It's just, they're democratic, but it's a socialist way of life. So healthcare is free. That's one of the big things. And then I move over here and everyone's like, or not everyone, like the people that were against Obamacare when he was trying to make medical more readily available for people and free for people and things of that nature. It was almost like there was a whole side of the capitalist country going, oh, socialism, Obama must be communist. And it's just, there's a lot of people that live in a cocoon. And if they could just branch out and go meet some people, talk to people. Okay, growing up in Cleveland, like I was brought up that the Cold War and Russia's bad and Iranians are bad. And it was the time. And then I go and I live in Istanbul and I turn on their news and it's Al Jazeera. And Al Jazeera has their view on things, but so does CNN. So does Fox. And I started to learn and then I'm meeting people and there's all these unbelievably nice, friendly people that are Muslim. And I was raised in this little cocoon and I'm like, wow, what a world this is. How incredible is this? How nice are these people? What a culture. Like it. And basically there's good and bad everywhere. That's what it amounts to. There is good and bad. There's bad right on our doorstep here. And there's greatness right on our doorstep here. But the same goes everywhere in the world.
That's so beautifully said, Brad. I am eternally grateful that we met. For our listeners, as we roll out the end of the recording and the podcast, I thought maybe you could give some words of wisdom and advice to those who want to be one of any of these three roles, agents of change, like you, I would dub you tonight, knight to you if I was the queen, as agent of change extraordinaire. Because you're trying to do that in your way and really being, I think, honest about the input that comes in and just not taking anyone's glossing over within your analysis. You're like able to pull back all the curtains and be honest. And maybe it's because of how you're raised from Ohio. So one is that. And two is I think our listeners have hopefully appreciated your honesty and your journey. And I think my second request to you, Brad, is for those who are trying to achieve, maybe give one tidbit of advice. And finally, for survivors, like you have daughters and you've already encompassed marginalization of women. And what do you have to say for all of our listeners about that? So one is back to your first part of your journey and advice for those who are determined to succeed. And two, how do we navigate that landscape and where we're being marginalized? And three, what's your advice for future?
If you're going to succeed in anything, it doesn't matter if it's sports or whatever, you have to find something that you love or as close to love it as you can. Because then the hard work, it doesn't seem like hard work. The sacrifices don't seem like sacrifices. It just seems like that's what has to be done in order to succeed. So that would be number one. And number two is you don't have to conform to what everyone, how can I put this? In order to succeed, you don't have to go to high school, get a degree, go to college for 4 years, get a degree, then go out there and pay your student loan and get a job. You don't have to do that. But whatever path you choose, you need to respect others' views. That is the biggest thing. You're not going to change somebody's views with words. You're not going to change it with a megaphone. You're not going to change it by demonstrating up and down a road. But when you're around people and you talk in a very respectful manner, you might be able to change their opinion, change their view, maybe, but that shouldn't be the goal. The goal should be for them to open up and respect other people's views. So if somebody wants to be a Democrat or a Republican, respect them. Doesn't matter. You don't have to prove you're right or you're wrong. If someone wants to be Catholic or Protestant or atheist or Muslim or Hindu, it doesn't matter. Respect them for what their views are. And that then you might be able to get people on board with just respecting people if you can respect people, there wouldn't be the violence that's out there today, because religion's a different topic, of course, and that's a whole different can of worms. But like, I don't understand why people like have to try to prove to somebody else that their religion is the right religion, when every religion can be proved, disproved 20 million times over. So it's a respect for other people. And I think that's where things lack a lot of time, where people always have to hear themselves and be right. And that's not really what this is about. You can have your views, but just find a respectful way to present them and listen to other people's views, because you might just learn something.
Beautifully said. And your final takeaways and advice, being the father of daughters on our podcast specifically, how do we empower and challenge?
Listen, my way might not be the right way. I don't know. I don't have a magic wand, but I try to give them autonomy to make their decisions. I try to give them autonomy in the safest way possible to make their own mistakes, and just try to be there for them when they do make their mistakes, and try to give them guidance on how to do something the next time, but also give them the full support that they could achieve and be anybody that they want to be. And they don't have to conform to what a society may or may not think a woman can and can't do. If they want to do something that they love, then they have to work at it. I've never played with one player or against one player who was a world-class player. I've never played against one, Katie, that didn't work hard. That was a great. That was a true great. There's one thing that's in common with everyone that is great, is they work hard.
I think that's so beautifully said, Brad. And I just want to tell our listeners a little bit more. Brad is someone I randomly met, but truly respected from our conversation. And I'm delighted to share this interview with him to all of you. But like Brad said, there's no faking your way or pressing your image out through SEO and TikToks and social media. The real deal is not an online moment. It is doing the work, as Brad said. It's living the everyday dedication and practicing the craft of your passion. And you said that too, Brad. Like, I lived in residence halls, dorms, my car, hotels, like random place, just to like garner the everyday landscape of pressing out my own life experience to change the world. And in many ways, Brad, you've done the same. You've done the hard work for your passion, which somehow connects, which I'm loving, with both of our passions. And ultimately, I think we crave excellence, but also supporting equity and safe spaces, including for your daughters going forward. So, Brad, this was amazing. I will close this out unless you have any last words.
No, thanks, Sarah. Thanks for having me. And I hope your listeners enjoyed. Who knows?
And you will love it. So all the Dear Katie listeners, please know, you can always find additional resources to support and guide you through the Take Back the Night website. We have a legal hotline. We have tons of things. Like, you just need to wear a t-shirt to feel whole. We have those. We have chapters. We have all kinds of ways that you can go out and make a pathway to healing and support. But I am truly honored to have interviewed and talked with Brad. And I hope all of our listeners will continue to tune in to the Dear Katie podcast for additional conversations that will lead you to healing and support. Thank you. And until next time, take care.